Well?
It's just after I see a movie, I like to go get a piece of pie and talk about it. It's sort of a little tradition I have. Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. My name is Oscar and with me today is...
Ralph.
Not Luke today. He is stuck in some other state working there. I don't know.
Sucker.
But whatever. He is... internet is, for some reason, a void in his area, in the hotel he's staying in, according to him. And he was being really picky about his sleeping schedule. I'm like, come on, you're a single guy.
Dude, it's unreal. I literally, like...
The bullshittiest excuse
well,
ever.
What's funny is that I have that excuse. And even then, I still record late. Like, that's my excuse. But that's been my excuse for the last, like, I don't know, since I was 20. So, like, 12 years. Fuck, yeah. I don't know, bro.
Anyway, but either way, he has internet. And without that, we can't really record. And I didn't want to try, really. So, no big deal. No Luke this time. But this is episode number 106. And today's episode is going to deal with movies that Roth chose. And those movies are going to be Netflix-centered.
Yes.
It's going to be Spike Lee's latest film, The Five Bloods, which is pretty popular, especially with the COVID. Everyone's stuck inside. It's extra popular now.
Facts.
And a little-known movie, a Chilean film called Nobody Knows I'm Here. Check that out on Netflix as well. And then to conclude, this is the ending of our current marathon, which is we've been doing a Sight and Sound marathon, checking out the best 100 movies according to all the best people out there, all the directors and critics and whatever, you know, this organization compiled all this stuff. Their number one movie we're going to do today, it's Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo. You can find this episode and all of our other episodes over at otherpodcast.com. Over there, you can find, our short-lived bonus episodes that we have on there, still on there for everyone to listen to, as well as our previous marathons, which include weird stuff, you know, town movies and city movies and, twin films and check that. I mean, Google that if you're not sure. And animation marathon. We've done original like classics marathon. I think that's cut up. We don't have another marathon. Let's see what else is on there. Top 10 stuff is there too. I haven't mentioned that in a while. All of our previous top 10s, every year we do like three at least. So check that out for sure. We have like three to 4 years compiled on there. So great list of stuff. I know people love top 10 lists. You can check out those shows on there on otherpodcast.com. Now, Ralph, how have you been? What you been up to in the last 2 weeks?
Stuff? I don't know. Playing video games like usual. I mean, it really has kind of been hot. Like, now I'm complaining that I can go out, but now it's, like, too hot to go out. Really weird.
Like, for walks, or are you talking about exercising?
Both. I guess for walks isn't bad if you go late at night. The problem is the fucking sun doesn't go down to like, 8:30, 9 o'clock. And I'm like, this. I have to go to sleep. Like, when am I going to sleep? Yeah. Well, I mean, I work at 4 a.m., so, like, it's stupid. No, I know you know. I'm just for the audience.
Yeah.
I work extremely early, so it's kind of annoying to have to do anything crazy. And it's just, like, my free time is, like, from 1 o'clock in the afternoon till like, 8 o'clock at night. So, I'm like, it's hot. But I'm still trying to do stuff. Kid went back to swim classes, which is great. It's just costing me a nice arm and a leg, but it is what it is because it's privatized now instead of communal swim class, like 4 or 5 students in each class, and it came down to like the price was manageable. Now it's only one-on-one teaching.
Right.
And they're like, we're offering a discount. I'm like, even with the discount, it's still expensive.
Yeah, but that's great that you're swinging it.
No, I know. We'll make those sacrifices. So we're sacrificing that, and we're not sending them back to jiu-jitsu, even though they're opening up back again just this month in July.
Yeah.
But
if you thought one-on-one swimming was expensive, one-on-one jiu-jitsu has got to be more.
Well, no. So there is no one-on-one jiu-jitsu. They're just going to space out, and you're limited on the amount of classes you can send them to, I think. I think it's like 3 times instead of the 5. So you get to pick, like, hey, which class, the ones that fills up. But besides the point, I have a credit with them. I could have sent them, but I'm going to send them back starting September. And I'll see how it starts from there, see how it goes. And then just because in August, he may have a vacation that I'm sending him to. So we'll see.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right.
How about you?
Well, you know, it's I mentioned last time, I believe, that I was going to be moved in by the time we did this show. And it's true. I am living in my new space. I'm standing in my new space. Not to say
yeah, because you don't have chairs. Rental. Yep.
It's an apartment. I'm standing in it because it's hot and I don't want to sit down in a goddamn chair anymore. We just got chairs, though. Yesterday we built them. Brand new.
Congratulations.
Chairs.
Do they wobble?
No wobbling. They're made well. They're made well. They were built well. Wow. The instructions were good enough. Let's see. We have, you know, it's interesting. This is, I mean, I'm not saying it's a money pit, but right now it feels that way because I'm just buying so much stuff.
100%. Yeah. Well, you don't have any of it. Yeah.
Right. When you have nothing, right. And I have a lot of help. It's great support systems from both sides of our family. Without them, we'd be fucked.
Yeah, that's good.
I would have way less right now. I'd be just sitting on one table with one table around, like a little coffee table we had. We bought on Facebook Marketplace. Mm-hmm. We've been going there for our lamps and stuff. Pretty successful so far. So if you want to hear experiences, there's one. Facebook Marketplace so far. Good experiences. Cool. Anyway, but without that, I'd be staring at way less furniture. But we're slowly getting there, Ralph. We're going to pick up our couch on Saturday because of 4th of July sales. So we took advantage.
What'd you end up getting? Did you get the one that mom recommended? Did she mention one to you or no?
I don't think she did mention one to me.
Oh, okay. She was supposed to mention one for like 400 she found.
Oh, no, I'm sure. We did not go that cheap.
It's
a little pricier. But I have great credit too. So it was like all super above board on everything. I got a deal.
Yeah.
Zero interest and got a couple $100.
Interest.
It's
okay.
And it's like a reclining double thing.
Dope. Hey, man. Whatever works for you guys, buddy.
Right. And we have to temper ourselves down too because we can't afford everything. But it's been fun. And we have our bedroom all made. Thanks, Roth, for helping out building.
Yeah, no problem.
I need to know when your next day off is. You can help me build the other thing. Let's see.
Still haven't built it? Oh, okay.
No, I have not. I haven't even opened the box yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're gonna do that soon. So it's been interesting. It's a fun experience. I will update everyone more as we go along here with the shows. But that's all I'm gonna say now. And then we'll just get into our recent discoveries, which are pretty self-explanatory. Raf, you have like two or three movies, right?
Two.
I have two also. So what are your two?
Perfect. One of them is I've never seen it before, which is odd enough because I love his collection, is Hayao Miyazaki's Porco Rosso. I'll read the description because it's ultra short. In 1930s Italy, a veteran World War I pilot is cursed to look like an anthropomorphic pig. That's essentially it. I saw the English version because I saw this on HBO Max because they have the Miyazaki collection on there.
So nice.
Or the Studio Ghibli stuff, should I say?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was cool. I can't get the voice actors right now because it's for some reason, but it is what it is. Super cool movie, though. It's a fight. The World War I pilot who is kind of like defending pirates from this. Not defending pirates, attacking pirates, defending the people from pirates in, it's not Italy because he's wanted in Italy.
Like in Greece or something?
He's like in Greece or something, yeah. And it's funny because he's obviously he's a bounty hunter. And he's like, he's defending people and stuff like that. It's interesting. He's like obviously the best pilot there. And they introduce an American who's there to be flashy or blah, 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 blah. Cool story overall. Fun movie. Very, very kind of very wholesome for the kind of action that's going on. I think he does best. Obviously, he always does a really good job of making it very lighthearted, even though it's like a serious thing to talk about. And then this one is just funny because everyone's human except for him. He's a fucking pig, and everyone lives with it. Like everyone's like, oh yeah, you're a pig. It's cool. He was just cursed, and you're like, wait, what? Like everyone's just acknowledging this. This is really weird.
Yeah.
Obviously his later work is way more serious stuff and things like that, not as light, but this one is early work, 92, so that was a fun movie to watch. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. I think you saw it also like maybe a couple years ago, right?
A few years ago. I may have mentioned it on this show or the previous show, whatever.
Yeah, I can't remember. That's why I was bringing it up.
It's a fun movie. It's one of the few movies I would qualify as a rollicking good time. Like it feels like that.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Appropriate thing to say about it. Yeah, it's a good movie. I liked it a lot.
Dope.
What's your next one?
My other movie is completely different from that. Is 2016's Train to Busan. The Sang Ho-yeon movie directed by him. While a zombie virus breaks out in South Korea, passengers struggle to survive on the train from Seoul to Busan. Essentially, it's a fun movie, fun zombie movie. It has its own little thing where they find out how the zombies work. They're kind of like in their own bubble, but they're also like traversing all of Korea, all of South Korea, or not all of it, but a good portion of it. So it's kind of cool to watch. And then
like having like a front row seats to the end of the world kind of thing.
Yeah, it really is. It's interesting, but it's very localized, and you can tell like it's just budget friendly. To a certain extent, because they do have a lot of good stuff going on. Yeah, so it's like you get to see this outbreak going on. Cool movie, man. I happened just to click on it. I was like, I want to watch something that's just fun, and I was like, let me go through my Netflix list. What do I have on here? And
then I was like, the bane of everyone's existence every single night.
I swear to God. And I was like, Netflix list. I was like, no. And then I finally found this one. And I was like, oh, you know what? I'll give this a go. If I don't like it in like 10 minutes, I'll just stop it and watch something. I'll watch The Office or something. I don't know. And no, it captivated me. Even my wife saw the second half of it. But my son woke up like 30 minutes left in the movie, or 20 minutes left. And he was like, I don't want to watch this movie. This movie scares me. And I was like, lame. But it's fine. Obviously, he shouldn't watch the movie anyway. It's mature as
fuck. Right. Yeah, it's mature as fuck.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But it was cool. Good story. I like how the main actor, I'm going to butcher anyone's name, Yo Gong. He basically, the father, he's basically like, hey, he grows in the movie, you know, knowing his faults and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool movie. And
How much do you hate that one passenger? You know,
God. How much do I hate him? I don't hate him as much as I hate the girl from The Mist, that actress.
I was about to compare him to that.
Yeah, you have.
The girl from The Mist is still the bar.
Huh? It's still the bar. Yeah, she's still the top. She's at the ceiling, at the peak. Or whatever. She's at the peak, claymoring everybody on the way up, you know? no one's yet to beat her. So
this guy came pretty close, though.
Did, but you know what? What was cool is that what the movie did a really good job with him, with showing how similar they were at one point. You know how they could be. So like it kind of brings him down a notch, and then he, you know, also the what's it called? Just Desserts is great about that. So that's all good.
Yeah, I guess so. You're right.
So that's Train to Busan. I had total fun with it. It should be on Netflix. I'm pretty sure that's where I watched it.
Yes, it is. They're having a deal with it. It's Netflix. If you're curious, Rafa, into seeing a little bit more of Train to Busan type stuff, they made an animated something.
Oh, really?
About Train to Busan. It's on Netflix too. I've seen it on my, I think I put it on my list, but I haven't seen it yet.
Interesting.
It looks like an animated version or like a sequel to it. I don't know. I have no idea what it is.
Cool. I should take a look at that. Yeah. That's cool movie.
Yeah, awesome. Good movie. I saw that when it came out 2 years ago. Let's see. I have 2016. Didn't see it 2016. But anyway, let's see. I have two movies here, two different movies in genre. Finally, I know that I stick to a lot of horror. One of them is a horror, but the other one's not. Lovebirds. The Lovebirds, to be specific.
Oh, yeah, how was it?
Yeah, because you guys mentioned it. I think you mentioned it first, and then Luke saw the last.
I never saw it. Oh. I knew about it, and I wanted to watch it, and then I forgot Netflix had it. But yes.
Right. But anyway, Luke did watch it last time on the Recent Discoveries, and now I have. I saw it on a whim because I was watching a different movie altogether that I'm not going to mention here because it's an arm and a leg to discuss, and I want to give it a proper greening at some other point in the show. But I was watching this horror movie at night. Now I'm living with my girlfriend now. It's my first time doing all this. So I already see a problem. You know, I put a horror movie on. She's trying to sleep. Guess what? That's not going to be good. So she told me to pick something, you know, fun or a comedy or something because the movie was freaking her out. She didn't want to have nightmares. And she is prone to all those things. And I offered, you know, I could put my headphones in. Not a problem. But no. So I didn't win that argument that evening. Maybe I'll win it this evening. But that's for a later day. But so I ended up watching The Lovebirds. And that's a movie starring Issa Rae and Kumail Nanjiani. I liked the movie too. Just like, I don't know if Luke gave it a positive review, but I'm going to give it one too. And say that it's a funny movie. I love back and forth. They do have good chemistry. These two actors, you know, being like in a relationship that's broken down or heavily stale or something like that. You know, the movie opens with them meeting, like the meet cute that they have. And then, you know, seeing how they like each other, right? You know, the first of everything. And then the movie's, you know, just cuts to, you know, 4 years later, and they hate each other, and they're kind of snickering at each other, you know, all this stuff. And then right when they, like, they both come to the conclusion that they should break up, you know, it's over, it's been over, all this stuff, right? They hit a guy with a car.
Yeah.
A bicyclist. And then from there, it's like one thing after another, as you can imagine. It's very nearly an action comedy, but it isn't. It is more like... equating it to Game Night is not a bad comparison, because Game Night is also not an action movie necessarily. It's a comedy with some action in it. I would consider The Lovebirds the same. And then from there, they think they're on the run from the cops, who think that they killed this guy and it was actually someone else. And you know, and they're trying to find the truth of everything so they can exonerate them. It's just one funny thing after another.
Yeah.
And it works. Not everything lands, but it overall really lands. And I laughed a lot a few times. And it ended up being something I was like looking forward to more than I thought, a comedy like this. And it worked for me last night. So there you go, The Lovebirds on Netflix. Check it out. I think it's fun. So
cool.
Next movie here is a movie that it's a horror movie I saw on Shudder, and it's called Incident in a Ghostland. The original title, though, is just Ghostland. So if Incident in a Ghostland doesn't work, just look for Ghostland. Ghostland, one word, because it took me a little bit to find it. I'm like, Letterboxd is just Ghostland. But on IMDb, it's Incident in a Ghostland. So just letting you know if you're confused. This movie is written and directed by Pascal Laugier. Logier? I'm not sure. He's French. A mother of two who inherits a house is confronted with murderous intruders on the first night in their new home and fights for her daughter's lives. 16 years later, when the daughters reunite at the house, things get really strange. I don't know if I approve of that synopsis, but it doesn't spoil anything. That's great. Yeah, this is made by the guy. I saw it because Pascal, the guy who directed and wrote it, he did one of my favorite horror movies, also a French movie called Martyrs. And I've never seen his other works before. And this movie came out, I believe, 2018. So it's kind of his recent movie. And I didn't know it was around. I didn't know that he had made one. And so I saw it for that reason only. And it's fun. It's a horror movie. But it's a good horror movie. And it's I had a lot of good time watching it.
Mm-hmm.
It really kind of like, because, you know, when you think, when I read that description, before I say the 16 years later part, you kind of, you feel like the whole movie, it's going to be that night, their first night at the new home, while these two murderous motherfuckers come in there, you know, with all their trauma, trying to kill them. And it's fucked up. It's one fucked up thing and another. It's very energetic. Everything's happening fast. It kind of feels kind of grounded in that way, but also like movie aesthetic, cheap, you know, cleaner. So I really liked it, and I thought it was going to be the whole movie. Then it skips, right? And one of the daughters is having a productive life, you could say, from that traumatic experience. You know, she's about to have a kid. She's a good writer. She wants, you know, she's like a horror.
Oh, okay. I thought you were being sarcastic when you said productive life. I was like, oh, man, where's this going? Sorry. You're good.
Yeah. I meant it literally. And then she goes back home, and then you realize that the other sister had never outlived or never got past that night where maybe she did. And she's constantly reliving that night over and over again, 16 years later, right? And then the whole movie really is about the trauma of the whole thing and the confronting that trauma and then realizing that trauma has layers. And those layers are often misleading to the protagonist, both of them, both sisters. You know, the thing that might have been hidden underneath the one that's productive, you know, the one that made it out, is probably more dangerous than the trauma that her sister, who's constantly reliving it every day, might have. And it's really interesting stuff it gets to. It is horror for sure, not for kids at all. It's horror. It's like a rated R thing.
Yeah.
And but I really liked it. It's really fun. And I like how it touches on these topics. So yeah, check it out. Incident in a Ghostland on Shudder. So
for some reason, when you say Incident in a Ghostland, I think of Strangers in a Strange Land.
Yeah, makes sense. Because Inna is not...
Maybe that's why. Yeah.
It's the Inna part. All right, so that's all I've got. One last thing before we move on to our first break and our first review. I want to mention here that we are, since we're ending the marathon this time, I already know what the next movies are going to be. They're not going to be marathon at all. But so we are going to have a discussion at the end of the show where we discuss about what we're going to do for our next marathon.
Cool.
Now, I don't know what that is, but check it out. I'm just saying, you know, for those who...
Awesome. Without Luke,
to the end.
He has no input. I love it.
Right. right. For those who maybe skip too much to the end, as soon as our third review is done, and just skip the rest, don't skip it. And if you want to hear that conversation, see where we land. So now we can get into our first review, which is going to be what, Rav?
The Five Bloods.
Yeah, The Five Bloods. Stay with us.
Stay with him.
Black GI, is it fair to serve more than the white Americans that sent you here? Nothing is more confused than to be ordered into a war to die without the faintest idea of what's going on. I dedicate this next record to the soul brothers of the 1st Infantry Divisions. Be safe.
Gentlemen, welcome back to Vietnam.
Look at that fan.
Anyway,
you're the man in all his glory.
Who was that guy?
That brother was the best damn soldier that ever lived.
Four African-American vets battle the forces of man and nature when they return to Vietnam, seeking the remains of their fallen squad leader and the gold fortune he helped them hide. This is Spike Lee's The Five Bloods, written by Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo. Those are the two big ones. There's more credits.
Yeah, there's a few writers in this.
Kevin Wilmot and Spike Lee as well. This is a movie starring Delroy Lindo, Jonathan Majors, Clark Peters, Norm Lewis, Isaiah Whitlock Jr. Who else we got? We have Johnny Nguyen, Ari Nguyen, Melanie Thierry, Paul Walter Hauser. I can't even begin to say that name. Jasper Pekkanen, I guess. Or
Pekat.
Sure, yeah. Jen Renault, yeah. Chadwick Boseman. I'm sorry, it's just top billed cast on IMDb, you know how it goes.
Yeah, yeah.
Sandy Huang Pham. Interesting cast. Big cast. What were we going to talk about? Oh, yeah. So this is just came out in June. Yeah, I thought it came out earlier. No. It makes sense.
Yeah. In June, yeah, we're at the end of June.
We are at the end of June. Yeah. Yeah. I totally forgot. Yeah. Oscar, what did you think of this movie?
Oh, dude, this movie was great. I really liked it. It was. It's very impactful. It's very, very. It feels personal, even though it's a story that Spike Lee wasn't a war veteran or anything. But he, it feels very personal, honestly. But a lot of his movies do. Most of them do, and it feels very prescient for the times. It's extremely at the right time kind of movie too.
Yeah.
Hit that stride at the right time, because these movies, a lot of these movies are made years before. No one can predict what's gonna be. No expert can tell you what's gonna be huge or not. And that's why a lot of studio systems double down on sequels and stuff of things that are more popular. That's why,
right?
Because no one can predict anything.
Yeah, you're trying to catch some of that lightning,
right? Like, imagine if this if Get Out got in this year or something, Get Out was huge, but imagine how much more huge, right? Anyway, but stuff like this, but not only is it prescient and all that, but this movie is flawed as fuck, but it's flawed in like a great way. It feels like someone's reacting to everything. It feels like it's a movie that is, completely involved in the events that's happening in the movie, and as well to our world, to our daily lives, our political landscape, our racial landscape. It really does all that. It's very reactive that way. It's flawed because it's all emotional kind of thing, and it's so kind of flawed in a good way. It feels like a human movie, and it's explosive, and it's very endearing sometimes, and it's a long movie, but it didn't feel very long to me personally, and it's like a 2.5 hour long movie. And I really liked it. The performances were great. And Delroy Lindo, man, this motherfucker, I know he's been in things here and there since the 90s, but his height was the 90s. I saw
facts, yeah.
We saw a lot of his movies. Ransom, he was in Ransom. He was in Clockers, wasn't he? He was in a bunch of movies that we saw, Rob, you and I, growing up. And
Get Shorty.
what was that movie that he played a bad guy in?
That's helpful.
Yeah, it's gone. Whatever. I can't remember right now. But anyway, Delroy Lindo, it's like seeing Elizabeth Shue suddenly, or Alicia Silverstone suddenly, or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those things because you haven't seen him in a long time. But yeah, he's really great in the movie, and he's definitely shouldering most of the emotional turmoil that the movie is confronting or asking you to confront or whatever. And Spike Lee, you know, he's two for two in a row here with Black Klansman in this movie. Now, I will say, though, that Black Klansman definitely hit me home way better. It's more of a polished movie. That movie is a little more, not just accessible, but it hits harder for me.
Yeah, I would agree.
But The Fabelmans is a great follow-up to that movie, and yeah, I really liked it. What did you think?
You had a great little thing that you said, and it's how you explained it. It's flawed, but it's flawed in a good way, that it adds to it almost. And I couldn't figure out how to put that in words. There was something wrong, and I wanted to say the movie is weak at certain points, because it's just like it's kind of movie tropey, and stuff like that. At least in my case, but you know what? I really appreciate something that Spike Lee's done with his newest all his newer stuff, which is like introduce these when they talk about, and I think I bring it up every time about Spike Lee lately, is when they talk about something, they reference it, he brings that reference. He like shows you the visualization of the reference. He's explaining to you who the reference is, or the character is explaining to you who the reference is. So not only do you get it, he's giving you the history of that specific thing. That's really cool, man, because like that's something that a lot of people expect you to know, and you know, a lot of movies would just give you you should know. And
we feel like they're kind of like trying to like, how do you not know this?
Right.
You know?
It's another thing. Exactly. Like an idiot. Very much so. Yes. And it's a very much so of that reason. And I think when in a Spike Lee movie or show, She's Gotta Have It or whatever, you have the way he does it. It's like he's giving like the proper homage, you know, like he's giving the proper, like, the proper description of something, and he lets like people get in it. Like, how do you, almost like it is telling you like, how do you not know? But he's giving you like, now you know. Now I'm telling you, right? And you should know this. And when he gives you a quick snippet of a history clip of this and that, it existed. Don't forget. It's like this really cool thing that Spike Lee's done, and I really do appreciate that work. That little, like, that's like his flair lately. And I really love
the 2000 flair.
I'm loving this flair a lot, and it's like my favorite thing he's had going on so far, for sure.
Educating as he's entertaining,
very much so. He's educating, and he's letting the actors educate as well. And it's really cool. What I like a lot about the movie is that this movie feels like I've seen this before. This movie, right? In a different manner, obviously, because it is unique in its own aspect, right? With the Five Bloods, and you know how they're like the first infantry and stuff like that, because they are African American. And they were basically used as fodder, like just in a lot of the things that they're said, right?
Yeah.
Throughout the movie. What I like about it, though, it feels like I've seen this movie before, the white version of this movie, right? I feel like I feel like I've seen this movie many times before, or something similar, or something kind of tropey, but this movie makes it feel like, well, why couldn't we already have done this movie with black actors, or not all black actors, but enough, and show the respect to hire proper. I mean,
this is still the first Vietnam War movie that does this.
It's unreal. You know what I'm saying? Like
2020. That's how long it's
right. Been. Exactly. And it's like also like hiring, getting also Vietnamese actors to act. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it
the
feels like
minority that we never think of.
The other minority that we don't think of, right? But it's just like, and it feels so weird, like that we didn't. Why haven't we done this? Like, it makes no sense.
It makes you want to like Google this. This can't be right, kind of thing. But it is.
But it is right, exactly. And it just feels like you should. I don't know, man. He does a good job. He does a good job of having everybody inclusive. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it feels good. It feels fine. It feels comfortable. There's nothing wrong. I feel perfectly fine with all these actors. Everybody doing their job. And like, I don't know. It just doesn't. It doesn't diminish taking away. If anything, it adds to it. It adds to the authenticity of it. That's what I like. That's what I like about the movie. Overall, the movie's okay. Like I said, you said it has some flaws in it, but I love the message. I love what it's talking about. I love that it's, you know, focusing, and I love the history. That's what I like a lot about the movie. So the movie's got a lot going for me, and I really do appreciate this movie for what it is. And it is like, oh, I mean, couldn't be perfect, more perfect timing. I wouldn't be surprised if he was trying to push his movie, and this movie was trying to come out like later, like in October or something, and they were like, "No, let's get this out."
Yeah, right. He probably put that. He probably edited that intro. You know.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Yeah.
Into it before pushing it out to make it more appropriate, and I would do the same.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it makes sense. It's you have an audience that's it's all like at most of
when he ties it all up to
right. Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it's like you have an audience right now, and
yeah,
I mean.
People are listening now.
Are listening right now. Not only that, but it's just that you have the platform as well, and you have people at home who are literally have nothing else to do. I mean, it's true. You have nothing. Yeah. I go to work and they're like, "Did you see this?" Like, no, I have a life to live. I'm still working 5 days a week. But that's me, right? But then not everybody. Some people are like, "Oh well, you know, blah 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 blah."
Or they're working from home. And they have more time.
Or they're working from home. And exactly.
Stuff or whatever. Yep. Yeah, I think we should get into spoilers so we can talk more.
I agree.
And whatever we want. So the spoilers for The Five Bloods starting right now.
David, I want you to take this rope. I want you to wrap this rope around your body 2 times. Go ahead. 2x around your body. Long. Like that. There you go. High as you can, man. High as you can. David, look at me. Where did you go to college?
The house.
The house. Who went to the house? Come on.
Stay with Moses. Class of 78.
Come on. What'd he do?
Won 2 Olympic gold medals.
Yeah.
400 meter hurdles.
He took 13 steps between each hurdle. Everybody else took 15.
David, that man could fly. What you gonna do? What you gonna do, David?
Fly.
Like?
Fly like Moses.
I want everybody to take a piece of this rope back on up.
Otis, back on up. Back it on up, man. You too, Mel.
Back it on up.
All right. Here, take this.
That's good, big man. That's good, big man. Right there, right there.
Fuck.
Get that slack.
Tighten up. Now, everybody, you get an armful and a handful of rope. We good?
We good.
I hear you.
On count of 3, you pull harder than a motherfucker.
Yeah, baby.
You got me?
We got you.
Got you. All right. 1. 2, 3.
You mean the one blood?
Yeah, right. Man, let's talk about Delroy Lindo's character.
Okay.
Really polarizing character to write, and I imagine to act and to watch. You know, how from the very beginning, you know he's going to be a problem. From the very beginning, you know, when...
Yeah, but you kind of sympathize with him. You have the guy who's obviously...
I even sympathize with his, like, Trumpian, like...
Well, you clearly have... He clearly has PTSD, right? Like, heavily, right? And he's clearly still, like, conflicted. He still has issues. He hasn't gotten over the war. He hasn't gotten over the death. A lot of issues.
And the real sympathy point is the nail in the coffin of his PTSD is when you find that towards the end there, when you see that it was his fault that...
It's his fault, yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, Wakanda's leader got killed there. And,
yeah, Chadwick Boseman.
Chadwick Boseman, yeah.
Stormin Norman, which is, by the way, his name in the movie. They don't ever give his last name, I think.
No, yeah, I don't think so either. But, oh, man, so I have so many things I want to talk about. But one thing I want to say about Chadwick Boseman's character is that it felt, now the movie doesn't explicitly say this, you know, the movie, I mean, Spike Lee's movies are kind of loud, you know, not super subtle all the time. But in this case, I don't know how this isn't out loud. But I felt, you know, the way they describe him, and they probably, and they do idolize him. So maybe in their descriptions it's different. But when you flash back and you get those flashbacks, right?
Yeah.
And you see this wonderful stuff. The details are so great from the opposition, the Charlie Viet Cong, the North Vietnamese, I think.
Yeah.
You know, doing those radio broadcasting. That was great.
Dude, those that was done so well. Yeah.
Some of my favorite scenes. And she's right about everything. She's right 100%. Even 100%. Though she's using it to turn the tide against the Americans,
yeah,
like for war. But she's right. She's not wrong.
Yeah.
And then when she mentions that Martin Luther King Jr., Martin Luther King dying, and the father wanted to rise up and all that, and Trevor goes and calms him down and all that. Like, it makes him seem like he is like this great Malcolm X type leader right there in this war,
right,
leading this platoon. And the movie, without saying it, this is how I felt. It felt like how many black people, men and women, have gone and been killed way too soon before they were able to be known for the next type of Malcolm X, the next type of Martin Luther King Jr., you know, because they didn't get a chance to even begin to flourish. This guy died young, 20-year-old in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Didn't get a chance to be that leader of his kind, of black people in America, because he never got out. You know,
right.
Kind of makes you feel like sad of all the deaths, you know, that kind of goes around there. And this, in this case, just Vietnam, but in general. And I think that Spike Lee, somehow he made me feel that in some of those flashbacks. And yeah. I wanted to mention that.
I agree. What did you think about, speaking of staying in flashbacks, what did you think about the lack of de-aging they did? Like, they didn't do a lot of de-aging.
Yeah.
I thought it was, you know, so I interpreted it, and I think you did the same way. I'm thinking is they're remembering, right? It's their memories, and they're remembering, and obviously Stormy Norman's never going to change. He's always been young because he died young, and they're all reenacting it, and they're like, well, we see ourselves like this now. We can't see ourselves how it is, you know. So like, yeah, sure, we did all everything right, and there's no reason to use CGI to diminish it or anything like that, but they see, you know, they're those people now, and they were able to do that then. They did some de-aging and like pictures and stuff like that, because you need to, right? You know, overall it really didn't look much different. They looked older than Chadwick and everything else also.
So this is actually tied to something that's news about the movie, about the making of the movie, and that is that, you know, Spike Lee, and I'll give you two examples here. This is all Netflix original examples. Martin Scorsese and Spike Lee both had passion projects they did through Netflix. One of them was, what's the one that Scorsese did? The Irishman. The Irishman. They gave him a shit ton of money. Whatever. No worries about time. No worries about budget. That's why it cost so much, because of de-aging, and the movie was like 3 hours long, right? And same thing with Spike, but they gave him budget, though. They gave him cuts. They gave him time frames. And he couldn't do the kind of work that he might have taken advantage of with the de-aging, for example.
Oh, really?
He might have taken, yes. And this is a problem that, as you can imagine, a man like Spike Lee has had throughout his entire career. No matter how much successful you think the man has been, he has always struggled making movie projects.
That's crazy.
Always struggled. And, you know, that's why he has to collaborate with a lot of different people all the time. And so, honestly, some of those times, I think, are his best movies, honestly, when he's, you know, you think of restrictions to an artist, gives him more ability to be creative. Maybe that works better with Spike. I don't know.
It is interesting.
Right. But I want to mention that because that goes along with the other thing is that he also wanted he had a different cast in mind.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I had the names here. I pulled it up real quick. He wanted Giancarlo Esposito, Samuel Jackson, Denzel Washington, and John David Washington, his son.
That was the
original dream cast that he had for the movie. And I'm not saying that this cast isn't great. This cast is amazing. The guy from The Wire, Delroy Lindo, of course, is amazing. Everyone's great in this movie. I recognize all the actors. And one of the guys is from the Last Black Man in San Francisco, for example.
Yeah.
And great actors, for sure.
Yeah. I'm saying,
always perfect, right? It's good. But imagine that cast, is all I'm saying. And a lot of them had like other movies and budget constraints and stuff, but they couldn't do it. But man, what a different movie that would have been, though. I wonder how different you kind of imagine that.
I do wonder. But I think I think overall Spike Lee makes it work. I mean, I think he kind of like puts it's, I don't know, the way I interpreted it, it just made me feel like the movie was trying to put me in that aspect. So I don't know, it kind of worked for me. I mean, that's it's kind of shitty to find out that even a fucking Academy Award winning director recently too, who usually means you kind of have like the next fucking project you want, whatever you're like, hey, greenlit. Hollywood is greenlighting it, still has, you know, control over budgets and stuff and issues like that. It's kind of annoying.
After this one, maybe he would get that freedom finally. And to lose to Green Book, though, ultimately. I mean, he won for a screenplay, I believe, for Black Klansman, but...
Yeah, I know. Well, I know. Green
Book. What the fuck is that, right? But that's
I'm still not watching it, but yeah, anyways.
Don't watch it. I saw it, but whatever. Yeah, and this movie talks, you know, it's the black experience, you know, in the individualness of the characters, of course. And I'm not saying, you know, they all have their own viewpoints, you know, and Daryl Lindo may be more out of, you know, extremely than others, but it's a black owned movie. That's what it feels like. And that's what it is. You're watching something through the perspective of someone else and someone that a race of people that have been completely excluded, vindicated, and, you know, tried against in this country that they're fighting for.
Right, you know, right, right. Yeah, I know. It's a travesty. You want to know something the movie does really good? It's like during the boat scenes when he gets in a fight during the shop and stuff like that, when they're just traveling in Vietnam. It shows that... black people are just like anybody. If you're American, you're American. Like, you're just, it doesn't matter if you're white, it doesn't matter if you're black, it doesn't matter if you're Hispanic, it doesn't matter whatever the fuck you are, you're American, right? And we're a different breed than everybody else. You're not European, because European is like, oh, well, it depends on where you're from Europe and this and that and bullshit, right? Like, they know you're American. Like, everyone knows these guys are American. Like, we all flaunt our shit. We all do our whatever we need to do. We're all kind of, you know, full of ourselves,
dick measuring tapes out.
Yeah, 100%, stuff like that. And they act American everywhere they go. And it's funny how they're not hated because they're black. They're hated because they're American, and they're American GI specifically, right? Whenever anyone does hate them because they knew they were ex GI, right? They were used to be in the infantry, so it makes sense why they're hated in that aspect. But they're not being hated because they're black. They're hated because they're American, ex-American soldiers. And that's what's like, you see that in any movie. Like, oh, those are the Americans. Like, ugh, like pompous assholes. These guys look the same way. They're the Americans, pompous assholes. Like, it's like that. Like that. This depiction of it is just because you're American. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. Like, it's, I don't know. It's one of those little things that makes the movie good. I don't know.
I like definitely. What do you think of I think there's three probably, but two mainly homages / inspirations that Spike Lee took from previous movies. One of them is, of course, Apocalypse Now. And the other would be The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. And then lastly, but not as much, would be like Oliver Stone's Platoon. I think these three movies... Not necessarily make up the Five Bloods, not even remotely, but they're, you know, they're homage. They are sometimes shot like copied in some way, like when it's a term for a remake or something. You know, he takes a lot of these two, especially the first two. I mean, the whole thing with The Treasure of Sierra Madre and the gold, that whole thing. They never even say it. Some lines directly from the movie, exactly as the movie.
Oh, is it? I've never seen the movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, check it out whenever you can. I think it's on the HBO, the old movies.
Oh, cool.
I think it's on there. But yeah, Apocalypse Now, we recently reviewed it.
For sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. the amazing, funny, almost kind of like not funny, kind of fucked up thing when you see the nightclub and the Apocalypse Now in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
As the long, steady shoppers is, you know, like the idea of these Vietnamese youngsters dancing to that in the background. It has, you know, can you imagine, has so many ideas and levels to that.
Yeah.
Fucked up. Hypocrisy of it, maybe, but yeah, what did you think of all that? And then The Rite of Valkyries, what did you think of all these homages that you, I know you saw for sure with Apocalypse Now?
Yeah, I saw the same thing with for Platoon. I thought the same thing, and Apocalypse Now, of course. I mean, how do you not? That's like almost hitting you in the head. I mean, you obviously see the inspiration for almost the making of the movie, I think, just for the lack of interest of showing the black version of it or the black part of it, you know. You could see that that's obviously like he's making a movie, because there is a story to be told, and there is something that, you know, any other movie we've seen from Vietnam and in those movies, sure, we get some, you know, black soldiers that we see, but it's never, they're never like a prominent role or anything, right? They always just see them as another soldier. And
right. I mean,
and every soldier, like in Apocalypse Now, like the two black people in there, one is the captain of the ship, right? And then the other one is, which is, I mean, it's a prominent role, of course, and the other one's the main gunnery for him, right? And yeah. But the other guy's the cool surfer, like, and he's got more of a role than the other two do. The other two are theoretically more important, like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's just like, it feels like it's always
about chasing a white guy chasing another white guy that went crazy in the jungle.
Exactly. Right. 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 In the end, overall, that's what it's about. So, yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's always something, you know, to that nature. There's stories to be told. And I think obviously he's giving the homage of like, I'm showing my, there is also the story that I want to tell from Vietnam from here.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people see Apocalypse Now as the PTSD movie. There's many other ones.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It is the one. This is Spike Lee's the PTSD movie, you know, among other things, because it's also about like a treasure. It's also about like our place today. And then the ending, there's like a whole epilogue of where the money goes and what they do with it, right?
Right.
And the main bad guy being that French guy, and then that French girl, you know, we get a little bit of that French girl and her like being privileged white girl, right? That tries to give back in her own way, and she, her sincerity works for her, but you know, she's also a minimal character, but it kind of gives all these angles.
Yeah,
it gives all these angles, and some of them don't work all the time, like we said, the movie's flawed, but it works overall so much better. But I don't know. I can't think of anything else to say. You know, it's funny because it's one of those movies that when you're watching it, I almost feel like a live watch might be better for us. But when you're watching it, I have so many other questions and ideas and I want to talk about it. But now that it's been like, sorry, last week. So, and, you know, I feel like, oh man, I maybe don't remember everything. As
I
go.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you. One thing I will say, either they're a lot stronger than they look, or gold brick bars don't weigh as much as I thought.
Yeah.
Like, also, those packs, where could I get a backpack like that? Because I feel like they can just take any fucking thing you throw at them. Because they carried a shit ton of brick bars.
Those are some of the inconsistency or logical flaws that the movie doesn't want to, like, answer.
Yeah, for sure.
That we just have to live with. But yeah. Again, not a big deal.
Oh, no, I know. What are my little nitpicks? It was just like, not a nitpick really necessarily. It's just like, a kind of a question I had. I was very curious. Yeah.
Definitely. All right. Well, I think that's all I have on the Five Bloods.
Yeah.
So everyone, we recommend to check it out if you haven't. I'm sure you're listening to it, this part of the review, knowing the movie already. But if not, if you weren't still unsure and you're listening to the whole thing, check it out. We didn't spoil nearly enough of that movie. There's a lot more to catch, and there's a whole thing with fathers and their sons in that movie too that we didn't explore here. There's a lot of stuff on there that you can discover for yourself. So check it out. The Five Bloods, highly recommended by us. We're going to take another little break here. When we come back, we're going to review a way lesser known movie also on Netflix, which is called What, Ralph?
Oh, yeah. It's called Nobody Knows I'm Here.
¿Por qué decírselo de esa manera? Tú dile que tiene una voz maravillosa, divina. Pero que la voz no lo es todo. Tú, me das la voz de tu hijo. Y yo me encargo. La pura voz, mi hermano. Tranquilo, yo me encargo de ponerle un cuerpo.
Amigos, esta noche, aquí, en este programa.
¿Y él quién es?
Lee el memo.
No lo había visto ni aquí, güey.
No, si lo hubiera visto, se acordaría.
Memo lives on a remote Chilean sheep farm, hiding a beautiful singing voice from the outside world. A recluse with a glittery flair, he can't stop dwelling on the past. But what will happen once someone finally listens? This is a Netflix's Nobody Knows I'm Here. Written and directed by Gaspar Antillo, also written by Josefina Fernandez. And Enrique Videla. This is a Chilean movie, if you didn't get the Chilean part of the thing.
Well, sometimes American movies can be abroad.
Oh, they can. You're right. And it's the original title is Nadie Sabe Que Estoy Aquí, which is Nobody Knows I'm Here, for those who want the translation. This is... I'm sorry. Ooh.
You're right.
Sorry. It's starring Jorge Garcia. I had a burp, but I saved it. Jorge Garcia. Shut up. What's it called? And which is Memo and this what's his name from Lost? If you
what's his name? Hurley.
Hurley. Hurley. Yeah.
From Lost. Everyone's favorite character, probably, because he never bugged anyone.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, I'll say the other people who are in it, but I don't really know anybody. You have a young Guillermo. What's it called? Which is Memo. Guillermo is Memo. Is a Lucas Vergara. You have Vincent Alvarez, which is young Angelo. Who else do we have? Juan Falcon. Leonardo. Jesus Christ, this kid.
I heard him freaking out.
Yeah, he's freaking out. The name is Mr. Freaking Out. Gaston Pauls, which is Angelo. And where's the girl? I'm trying to look for the girl. Doesn't pull it up. Milare Lobos, which is Marta.
Okay, got it.
There it is. That's the one I was looking for. Because it's the roles that are important. So I made you start last time. Am I correct? Yeah, that sounds about right.
I don't remember. This time we actually took a break, like a few days.
A few break. Yeah, it was a nice recording in this. I'm pretty sure it was you who went first. So I'm going to go first in this one. Okay. So Nobody Knows I'm Here. I kind of picked this movie just because I was looking for something different than what we normally do. You know, I'm normally very salt of the earth kind of guy. I like my actions. I like my shit. And I wanted to watch something different. I didn't even know it was going to be in Spanish. And it's all in Spanish. And it's obviously the dialect of Chilean. So they have words that even I don't understand. But with the power of subtitles that were also in Spanish, I did my good job of using what's it called? My good old mind. Context clues. Yeah, there you go. That being said, so I watched it all in Spanish. I think there was an option to watch it in English. I'm not too sure.
I hope not,
but maybe at least English subtitles.
Have you tried watching Dark in English? It's really hard. It looks it sounds ridiculous.
No, I don't plan to. Anyways, I thought this movie was a little weird at first because of just like what's going on, and especially like the focus on like the breathing and stuff like that in the movie. And just like, because it really focuses just everything around Memo. Like there's no scene without him. So that was really interesting. And then to see, obviously, just find out that there's obviously a troubling past, right? That bothers him. And then just to get to the point where, you know, the drama and everything else happens. And it's fucked up. It's a fucked up story to find out that, you know, like everything that's happened to him and why he is the way he is and things of that nature. But I overall thought the movie was cool. I thought it was... it was like almost a little boy who never grew up, who never got to grow up. And seeing that, the way he acted and the way he did things like that. But I overall, obviously, this movie heavily and just relies on, what's his name? Jorge Garcia's character. The actor. I mean, because he's in every scene. Obviously, it's played, I think, to his strengths. I think the movie was pretty cool. And it's also like, It's oddly like satisfying just seeing him doing mundane stuff, but it feels like, oh, like I'm doing hard work for a hard work, you know, for a day's work. You know what I'm saying? Like he feels like he's doing stuff that's like, oh, okay. Even though it's not the most important job, he's still doing it as something that feels very, very satisfying in the end, like, just to do it. So like you seeing that and seeing like little things that he does, it was cool. And then obviously when you meet everything else. So overall, I would say I'm positive in the movie. I like the movie. Especially like, cause I think it focuses in on like what it should, like, which is a lot of movies have a problem with, like, why don't you just do what you should be doing instead of beating around the bush? Which is just Memo's problems, which is good. It's just kind of what I really liked. It just kind of zeroed in on and never swayed.
All right. Well, without spoiling, I would say that I very much enjoyed this movie as well. More than I expected. But then again, I expected nothing. I didn't know anything about this movie other than Hurley was in it. And the only reason Hurley was in it is because he was in the icon poster of Netflix when I clicked on it. And that's all I knew. I didn't know it was about a singer or anything. But this movie, it kind of feels kind of Chilean. It's kind of very like rugged outback of Chile kind of living. Yeah, this movie, to me, I saw it. I mean, I almost, one could almost describe Jorge Garcia's character in the movie as like, almost like an Arrested Development in a way, right? By the way, you kind of said the same thing where the kid never grew up. Oh, the guy never grew up. I mean, not the kid. The guy never grew up, and you see flashbacks that support that. And for sure, I can see that. But to me, I saw it as like a deeply troubling, traumatized man.
Yeah.
Because of what happened. And obviously, maybe I didn't see the trailer for this. I don't know how they marketed this movie. As a matter of fact,
I didn't even know
this movie existed. It was so under the radar in Netflix's, you know, daily whatever, pushing you stuff, that I didn't know it existed on there. I didn't know how recent the movie is or anything, you know. So maybe it's popular in Chile. Maybe it's a big-time movie there. Maybe it's like the top 10 there, right? But here, I never even heard of it. So I don't know how they're marketed, but I can see it one way going to like a dark comedy angle of like, game being, like I said, like a child in, you know, and Arrested Development, but in a funny way, and you know, some people thinking poking fun of his size and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but the movie, it's not, does not actually, I feel like to me, it didn't actually like hit the low bar and went under the belt on that. Didn't like land any cheap jokes on it or any like easygoing. Didn't make it cute, really. It made it interesting. Like the guy looks harmless. He feels innocent. He feels like he has gone through some shit, but he never feels dangerous or like a bad person anyway. Somehow the movie manages to do both. Because, you know, for a while in the movie, you don't know why he's like this. You don't know what he's doing in the sheep farm.
Right.
You don't know what's going on. You just know he's doing it. He barely talks, you know? And that's
it. I mean, barely. He doesn't even want to be seen by people.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, and you know, comes in this girl who I think in the plot description on Netflix kind of makes it up like someone finally makes him talk. And it really doesn't play that way. It really doesn't. The guy doesn't want to talk to her. He's not like head over heels or it's not about that.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a love story, too. I was like, let's see where this goes.
And if it is, it's like very lightly. And as always, it's like mentioned at the end. It's not even a whole thing. Yeah. And I was surprised at where that went in a good way. I mean, like, it just came out naturally. He was not going to just suddenly come out of a shell. He's going to want to try to own it back. And that relates to his childhood trauma. And it really works out really well. Without spoiling it yet, I really liked it. Jorge Garcia really carried this entire movie.
Yeah, he does.
All by himself. And he did a good job. Totally, like... it's very nice. I haven't seen any of this guy's other movies. I'm not up with my Chilean movies. I've seen some for sure.
I think this might be his first big one.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, then there you go. Then I caught his first one.
Yeah, he's got a short film before this. Other than that, that's it.
Well, it's very good. I liked it. Good first attempt and first debut. But do you want to talk about anything else maybe or anything to pitch it to others, to sell it to others to watch before we get into spoilers?
Yeah, I was like, it's kind of hard to talk about it without getting into spoilers. I guess the way I put it is, how do I pitch this to somebody? It's an interesting, like, what's it called? Little, like... snapshot of someone's life that obviously is like a troubled somebody with a troubled past living as a recluse in a country you probably wouldn't think that the country he's in is that, Chile. Mm-hmm. Where he is, he feels like he's, I don't know, I feel like Norway sometimes, like it's just in an island, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
He feels like he could be anywhere. But the fact that it's it's in Chile or it's just in Spanish also, makes it like, gives it that curiosity of like, where are you? It's almost like you're almost nowhere to be found.
You know, it kind of makes it feel like it's like universal, right? Because like a lot of countries can have like these.
It does. It does very much so. Yeah, I feel like I can name a couple spots here in the States that I feel like that. Other things like that. I feel like other places, obviously, and just other countries.
Europe, yeah,
100%. So I feel like it's that, and also just to see the fact that every, you know, and. It's also like, on that note also, his troubles are troubles that other people have also. And I know it comes from, he's like from Miami, that he lived in a while, right? That's not spoiling anything, because that's like in the beginning of the movie. But he obviously, like, you know, like, he had the time to potentially not be where he is also. So yeah, that's what's it called? It's interesting. Like it's just a little interesting movie. Like, it's about like it could happen anywhere, but it's happening here. So yeah.
And it's also not a harsh movie, really. It's not a harsh movie. It's pure drama, but it's not a harsh movie at all. It's not a comedy. It's not a lot of things. It's just a pure drama about one man.
No, we're very much.
Or another. It can be inspirational. I guess I can see that inspirational part in this movie for sure, as a genre, maybe. But like, it's not like a beat 'em down version of anything. It's not like a Lars von Trier where it's all depression all the time. It's not like that at all.
Yeah, no, it's more like a snapshot in his life, right? And we're in a slice of life, I guess. We're Marta in this movie. Very much so, you know? We're Marta coming in, not knowing anything, right? The difference is, I guess, also to put it, we're like a drone following him at all times. Just started, though, if you want to look at it that way also, because we do have it from...
later in the movie.
Just, yes, very much so, yes. So yeah, I guess you could look at it in that perspective, but we just came into his life. We don't know what's going on. We're just trying to figure it out.
Exactly. All right, and with that said, let's get into spoilers for Nobody Knows I'm Here, starting right now.
Here I've come, I won't be long. Just to ask what you should know, there's this land down below. No hope in my soul. There's no feeling, this world's too cold. Here I lie and watch the stars. Feel I'm dreaming all my life. Here's the love I forgot. My heart's dancing low. Something's wrong, I don't belong. Oh no, nobody knows I'm here. Nobody's talking to me, and no one can set me free.
And that is to say, I mean, you know, when you figure out what's happened, it's the movie moves on. So what happened, in case you're still listening and you haven't seen the movie or don't want to see it, is that you find out that he's a child prodigy in music, like talent and singing talent. Yeah. He had great vocals as a kid, and in the flashback shows that, right? And it shows also the harsh truth of a lot of pop musical, especially child, but let's say anyone really, industry, is that it's all about how you look too. It's not just, you know, can't be a star like that. You need a hot, young, someone that the little girls will like fawn over and whatever. At least that's the excuse they make. And that's exactly what it is, like the Chilean version of American pop or American Idol or something, right? Like he joins that competition, but they convince the dad to sign away his kid's voice to not sing in front of people, but just to sing it for this pretty young boy, right, who has no singing talent, but he's going to be singing this kid's voice in a way, right? And it's fucked up. It's very fucked up, and also very appropriate to a lot of the auto-tune nature of some of those pop stars that we've had in the 2000s, right?
Yeah.
Not to mention other real cases of this coming out in some places, and others are still tightly shut. There's also, you think of ghostwriters in the same vein, but different. There's a lot of fakery, is my point. Like, you know, Donald Trump did not write his own books, for example, things like that.
Yeah, it's autobiography, but at least in those books it says written by somebody else. You know,
because no one will believe that. It's too far.
Right, exactly. Like, he had a time to
book. If it's a coloring book, we'll believe it. But that's it.
But drawn by somebody else.
Right, drawn by somebody else. Be squiggly lines.
Right, exactly. I get it. And it is true, and it's funny because he never had the input. That was the fucked up part. And it's like, at first it was like his dad was like in it, like, well, what do we do? Let's change his image, you know? Like,
Make him lose weight
and the conversation. What do we do? Do we make him lose weight? Do we make him do this? Is that what we do? You know, like, how do we change his style? And it's like, oh, he's just not going to sell. What's funny is, like, I thought of Adele right away.
One that wrote that song specifically about being kind of overweight.
So. Right, exactly. And I thought of other singers who just have a beautiful voice. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, they don't look like your model that you wanted to look, right?
Right.
And I go, but you get where you are, and sometimes the voice just takes you Like
A Star Is Born started off that way, but then you're like, but you're Lady Gaga. You look hot.
But you're Lady Gaga, right? Exactly. Right. That's the,
right? That's the
thing.
That was not a believable part of the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fucked up. You know, the real gut punch this movie had that like really like I was like pissed off and really felt for the trauma, obviously, is that, well, the main trauma isn't just that he wasn't allowed to do all this, is that he was never cared for by the people that were supposed to be caring for him. Right, that's what right. it is.
That's what it is,
he's a kid. He has nothing to be blamed for. Nothing is his fault, and everything happened to him only. That's what's really fucked up. But the gut punch in the movie was when you see that one flashback of his father, but then you see his father in present day, and the clear, like, you don't have to know him more than the 2 minutes you actually meet him in that scene, in the present day scene, but you know exactly what kind of an asshole train he took from that day in the flashback till the present day.
Yeah.
To be that way, to tell his son those things, to fucking impose and expect that shit off him. And, you know, oh my God, such reverse psychology that you can just imagine all the times he must have played through Jorge Garcia's character. I forgot his name in that movie already. Like how many times he must have said that just to quell him when he was younger or a teenager and shit, just to get him to play along with the rules. It's so fucked up. I hated it. I hated that whole thing.
Yeah, well, and then it's just when he comes back and starts talking about what it did to his life. And everyone talks about what it did to their lives, and right. no one talks about what it's done to him, who's yeah. obviously clearly
the one
has
person
issues.
That hasn't profited for the one talent that they actually have, which
hasn't profited at all, right? I mean, to my understanding is no, he never no. The guy's like, I lost all this money and I lost your mom and I lost this like right. in the lawsuits, and it's like, what are you talking about? Like, it wasn't my money anyway, A, and like you're profiting off of me, like it was just fucked up.
That's the kind of Gary Coleman too, because didn't he go through this with that show he did when he was a kid and his parents stole his money?
I think so.
That was him, and that's what happened to him.
Yeah, I think so.
He was broke, even though he was a huge celebrity. So
And then like his fucking the dad passes him on to his like saint of a brother who takes care of him.
Right. Yeah, the uncle's cool. I like how he plays the whole game and the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't want to press the kid. He's an adult, not a kid, by the way. But he doesn't want to press him, but he knows this fucker needs to heal, needs to acknowledge and accept some things.
Right.
But he doesn't ever push him. He kind of lets him live. And lets him live around. And he kind of takes care of him, even though he's older, like, ideally, like, should I, you know, take care of him? But no, it's the other way around, and it's clearly like that. And, again, all this is kind of done like the, you know what the movie does, really the magic of it is that the whole movie from the very beginning to the very, well, to the end, I guess, it feels like everyone's lived in this life for longer than the movie's running time. You know, it feels like they've lived there for a good while.
Yeah, it does.
It feels like, you know, like that asshole pop singer that took his voice, a pretty boy who was wheelchair bound. Like, it feels like he's, you know, been that guy for a long time. You know, it all feels very, the way they act around each other. Kind of plays, you know, it's a good job. Did a good job there.
Yeah, the what I like is that he still calls him out on stuff that he does. Like the one weird thing that he does, and it's interesting because it's like you don't know what's going on with a memo in this part where he's at a house, like he's at a really nice house, right? And you're like, oh, okay. And then somebody's coming, and he runs away, right? Gets on the boat and leaves.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay, maybe he just doesn't really want to be seen. And then he's going to his uncle's house and he's chilling there. I'm like, no, he lives there. He just goes to people's houses and like kind of just wants to like hide and sneak in. That's like something a kid would do. Like a kid just wants to go in, you know, and just do dumb shit, right? Not wreck anything, but like almost like
Bird watch for people, but people watch.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, right? But yeah, so, and it's something that a kid would do, but at the same time, as somebody who him, he like wants to see how others live. Clearly he's interested in other people and stuff like that. He literally has like a phobia, with the one part where his uncle cuts his fingers, which I totally saw coming.
Okay.
I mean, the motor, you turn it on so many times, I'm like, someone's going to get cut. Something's happening, right? He goes and drops them off, and they're like, come on, come with us. And he just drives away.
Yeah.
He gets right back on the boat and he drives away.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, yeah, I can't deal with it. I'm sure, like, it was like, I don't know, just whatever PTSD he's got.
Yeah. What do you think about that? The movie using that device of him, like, that thing he was doing with breaking into people's houses, but not do anything.
That was like, I don't know. I felt like it was almost like meant for that one scene later.
At the girl's house?
Yeah, at the girl's house. But I also felt like it was just a way of, like, at first it's weird. At first it's like, what, I don't get it. But then thinking about it, you're like, oh, I think it's more like he has an interest in people. He wants to get to know people, but he literally just can't bring himself to talk to people. So he'd rather just go in and just see how they live and see how they, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I got out of that.
No, yeah, that's essentially what I did too. I couldn't think of anything nefarious. I don't know if it was really necessary. But I guess as far as a strange element in a movie, that would qualify. so like a quirk, you know, a quirk of the movie.
Right.
Right. That would qualify. Yeah, but then you realize that as the, you know, as he gets famous again, you know, for being this guy. And I love the writers. Oh, I love to hate him so much. The writers outside his car when he was going to the TV station.
Yeah.
Or the hotel, I think. And they were like, don't betray my love for this one pop idol that I've never met, you know, kind of like, oh, I love it.
Which is funny because it's like, did he? So I know, and it's funny, and it's good that I didn't get any more than the fact that he's in a wheelchair. I didn't get any more than that. I just got the, I was really, like, did he continue singing after that? Or was he already like a pop star? And then he got injured and then he just stopped singing?
So that's the one part I was going to ask you. One of my questions, actually, is it, I think the movie implies, and I don't know, it's not clear, obviously, because we're asking, we don't know.
Yeah.
But I think he put him in a wheelchair.
Yeah, the movie does imply that, yeah. Okay. Man, the movie implies it just through context clues. You have to pick that up because...
Was it that scene? That one background? That scene that the...
Yeah, where he pushes him off the thing. Yeah, I think with the music video. Yeah.
That was the time that he... Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I wasn't sure if it was then or if it was some other incident. And I wasn't sure how it happened until the guy was saying backstage before the show actually started or live on tape, whatever, that, oh, you know, I'm just going to apologize to and forgive you. And I'm like, oh, okay, so he put him on there. I wasn't sure until that moment.
Yeah, no, neither was I. But the dad did mention you made this accident and lawsuits and bullshit. And I was like, okay, well, what are you talking about? He never says anything. He just says that. And then when you see him in a wheelchair, I was like, oh, well, that's got to be what it is.
I didn't put two and two together until the guy mentioned it. But yeah, that's good.
No, for sure. I didn't know until he mentioned it either. I didn't put two and two together until then. But I was like, that's what the dad was talking about. That's when like it came back. I was like, that makes more sense. The scene where he's arguing and shit. And I was like, man, all these guys are just pieces of shit. Well, everyone just thinks about themselves. And this fucking guy can't even fucking get a fucking, little break. Like over here, no one ever wants to look at it from his perspective. Even the people, the fucking host of the TV show or whatever that was going on. Nobody gave two fucks.
They don't care.
Well, they don't care.
They're the nicest way of saying they don't care.
Yeah. It was, what did you think of the performance?
It was great. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
That was the part where I realized this is kind of an inspirational movie because that's, again, Mike drops the fucking mic there and he just leaves.
He really does, yeah.
And I mean, and if the movie ended right there, I would have probably felt a little more elated overall, but it was a perfect nice touch at the end where like when he went back to her house and they just laid in bed. That was very sweet. And it was a sweet ending to already an inspirational, you know, mic drop moment. Yeah, it was good. It was good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like the title and the song of the, because it's the name of the song also, the title of the song.
Yeah.
And I feel it's a little bit too much over, like, I'm beating on the head about literally what it is about, what the movie's about.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. Like, nobody really does know he's there, like, for real. Which is kind of funny, but a little much, especially towards
two on the nose.
A little too on the nose, yeah, but it's okay. You know, I did like one of the things he does, and I don't know if the director did this on purpose or if maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I feel like the fact that he does, you know, when he's singing and he goes to the band, and I don't know if he's just feeling himself because it does look like he's feeling himself, right?
Yeah.
Or he wants to also highlight the band because nobody knows the band's there. They're just playing music. No one knows who they are unless if the camera goes to them because the camera's following him, right? And he's like shining the light. It feels like he's shining the light on everybody who doesn't know about the people who are in the background doing things also. You know,
yeah, it did feel that way. He felt like he was giving credit to the band for helping him along with the song, or
yeah, that's how I did feel. So maybe I wasn't reading too much into it. Okay,
it's like when Mick Jagger like dances with the backup dancers, you know, or brings them up stage closer to dance with them.
Yeah,
middle of a song, you know, kind of bring some, I mean, because for whatever reason, but I'm saying kind of highlights some that they're there right there doing the backups.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It kind of felt like that to me. But the whole thing was very nice. As well as like a double meaning, that whole inspirational singing part is not just showing the world, hey, this is me. This is what I can fucking do. This guy stole my voice. Here's how. And here's me singing. But it's not only that, but it's his own personal thing, because he's been daydreaming, doing this all the time, you know, with his
outfit. He really has, yeah.
And to see him actually do it in a suit, you know, it's different suit, right? Different than what he imagined, but it's still, he like lets it out. And that's the first time you actually see him like, you know, let loose. The first and only time, really. And let loose the way he wants to be.
Right.
The way he imagined himself to be. Kind of like a lot of like antisocial people might think that way, or a lot of people with the similar traumas or of reclusiveness and stuff. You can see that kind of thing there. I really liked it. Very nice. A very sweet movie. I liked it.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
But other than that, though, I don't have a whole lot of else. I mean, to say, I liked it. The song was catchy. I liked it fine. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I did like the song also. It was catchy. And actually, it was like humming it or something later that night after I finished it.
All right. Any last thoughts, or are we good?
No, I think we're good. I mean, I think it's kind of hard because everybody else is just there as a background character, very much background, except for the uncle, I guess. The uncle plays the biggest supporting role.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, besides Memo, it's kind of hard to just know that. That's really the only person we can talk about too much, and we already kind of talked about everybody else. So yeah,
we did. All right, so that's Nobody Knows I'm Here. Check it out. We recommend it. Well, I wonder what Luke would have said about this movie. But anyway, we're gonna take another break here, but not like days, just a moment. And then when we come back, we'll review what's the movie again?
Vertigo.
Vertigo. Right. Stay with us.
Happened?
Well, you fell into San Francisco Bay. I tried to dry your hair as best I could. Your things are in the kitchen. They'll be dry in a few minutes. Come on over by the fire. Here, I'll give you some cushions. Like to have some coffee? Well, here, you better have some, or perhaps you'd like a drink.
I fell into the bay and you fished me out.
That's right.
Thank you.
You don't remember?
No, I...
You remember where you were?
Well, yes. Yes, of course I remember that. Then I must have had a dizzy spell and fainted.
Where were you?
At Old Fort Point. Out of the Presidio. Of course I remember. I often go there.
Why? Why do you go there?
Because I love it so. It's beautiful there. Especially at sunset.
A former police detective juggles wrestling with his personal demons and becoming obsessed with a hauntingly beautiful woman. This is 1958's Vertigo, Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo. And don't get it confused. iconic movie. This is number one movie on the AFI. Is it AFI?
The Sight and Sound.
Sight and Sound. Sight and Sound.
Yeah, number BFI, one, right? Number one to as consensus, granted, obviously.
Consensus, by yes, voting, yes.
By all filmmakers tallied up in this poll and all critics in the world. Or as many as they could get a hold of, apparently, because that's like the whole point of Sight and Sound is it's a huge reference of people picking these movies. It's not like just people. It is people in the professions.
Correct.
And they all unanimously want Vertigo, you know, overall, I mean, number one. It finally dethroned Citizen Kane. Like 2 issues ago, so like 10 or 20 years ago, it dethroned Citizen Kane finally. Vertigo made it number one. It was kind of a big deal, too. I remember hearing a lot about it at the time, that Vertigo was number one. But no one was surprised because Vertigo is a great movie. Well, that's what everyone said. So, anyway.
Correct.
I was interrupting you.
That's okay. Not a problem. I'm just going to read the cast real quick. Starring James Stewart, Kim Novak, Barbara Bel Geddes, Tom Helmore. I don't know why he's there. And that's basically it. Those are the big roles. Because everything else is the coroner. Do we need to know the coroner? So yeah, this is, I want to say it's my first time because I don't remember the movie. And if I did watch it before, so I'm going to go it's my first time.
Okay.
I guess since it's theoretically Luke would do this if he was here, but he's not.
So Luke, what'd you think of Vertigo?
Fascinating.
And then it's your turn, Rob.
That's my turn. Okay, perfect. Well, thanks for your input, Luke. Vertigo. This is a longer movie than I expected in the aspect of, like, I didn't know where it was going.
Oh.
And it's an interesting movie because how the movie starts off with, I've definitely seen that scene before. I've definitely seen that beginning scene before.
The shot where you push in and you pull out to zoom.
Yes, yes. It's like Alfred Hitchcock iconic, found the zoom iconic. Button. It's very super iconic. 100%. 100%. Yeah. So, you know, but it obviously gives you that backstory for our character here, which is Scotty. What's it called? He's James Stewart's character. He's a detective and he's trying to chase and he just can't make that jump. But yeah, wow. So the movie, and then starting off with that and this banter with this girl that he's friends with, what's it called, that they talk about, and like, what is he going to do with his future? And then he gets kind of hired, or weirdly hired, because it's almost like doing a personal favor, because I don't think he's getting paid for it.
I don't remember them talking about money.
Neither do I. For my friend, that's something about the wife being weirdly crazy, doing shit, possessed potentially and shit like that.
It's out on right possession. He's like, I don't know if I believe this, but look, my wife is clearly possessed by this old person.
Super out there. Yeah, super out there.
Yeah.
And he takes it, and obviously that's played by, what's her name? Kim Novak, who plays the role there, and beautiful woman, by the way. And she... So yeah, and then they obviously potentially, like, you know, he follows her, making sure what's going on and stuff like that. And then when, I guess, you know, there's a love story involved. It's weird, hard to, like, there's nothing really to spoil this movie because it's such an old movie. I don't know how the movie goes. It's just like, I felt like, okay, so where are we going with this movie? I thought like this movie could be over around here, but then it has like a second act to it that you're like, oh shit, there's a lot more going on. And
yeah, it's about like a fourth act, like a surprise.
It's almost like a fourth act. And it's just like the way it goes at first. It's like, man, what are you doing? And I'm wondering, like, I was very curious. I was like, where is Hitchcock in this? Where am I getting Hitchcock? I've gotten some flares of Hitchcock so far, right? The beginning, I got that. I got some stuff during the middle of it of Hitchcock stuff.
Oh, and Ralph, you know, you could spoil it too if you want.
No. I know that. And I was very curious, like, when am I getting it? And then basically that third, fourth act or whatever happens, when he's like just desperate looking for, he sees her everywhere at the restaurant, walking about, because he was madly in love with her, which is funny because it's just like, okay. That's the only like unbelievable thing, because it's like, oh, you fell in love with somebody you just met like 10 seconds ago. Okay. Or yeah. She fell in love with you. That's the one. You could fall in love with her because you're kind of stalking her. That's cool. But she fell in love with you. Okay. You know, that kind of part. But it's just like you're watching it and I'm like, oh, this is the Hitchcock part. Like, this is all. Like, it's been like, I fooled you. It's always been me, you know, like, I was like, fucking Hitchcock. And I was just like, I really felt like that. I really felt that way. And I guess just like how that whole thing goes. And it's almost like, we want to know it's her. We know it's her, but we want to also have him know, but not in the way that he's figuring it out, you know? And it's like, it's really cool, really weird. And it's a really great movie. I mean, I had loads of fun watching it. And I obviously watched it in like one sit through because it's just that compelling. It's a really good movie. So yeah, I can totally see why it's on a lot of people's number ones or why it's voted number one.
Yeah. I guess I'll take over for a bit here and just say that, well, a lot of things. But one is that it has a very Rebecca feel. Have you ever seen Rebecca by Alfred Hitchcock?
I don't think so.
Like a good 20-something years
before. No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
For example, like Hitchcock, by the time Vertigo came out, this is still before Psycho, but he was already huge. He's so huge already. He's already made Shadow of a Doubt. He made Rope, I think, by then. A lot of great movies. I know North by Northwest came out after Vertigo, I want to say. Anyway, doesn't matter. But he's been doing some great stuff. He's explored so many varieties and so many ways of the murder mystery type. There's so many, like, the ideals of a murderer versus the person who catches them through perspectives of both kinds of people, either in the same movie or independently. He did a lot of those kind of things. A lot of love within, like, these horrible situations. All that stuff. I feel like this is a great... It's a great progression, and it did, and that trick that you mentioned, that, like, where's Hitchcock throughout this movie, is that, yeah, he almost tricks everyone into thinking, like, no, I'm gonna do a supernatural paranormal movie now.
Right.
But he never, because he's never done that. I mean, Rebecca's closest to it, which is why I mentioned that movie, because the notion of that, you know, that woman in the old house with the dress, anyone remember that movie? Knows what I'm talking about. I'm not gonna really spoil it here because I've seen it a long time ago, but it has that same feel to it. Like there's something else going on, something otherworldly with this character. And in Rebecca's case, Rebecca, or that, well, she's dead in the whole movie, but it's not point. Anyway, but in this movie is it's like this other woman. What's her name in the movie? She has a Hispanic name.
My God, I can't think of her name right
fuck.
Now.
Whatever. She's being possessed by this woman that's based on her real history 100 years ago that she knows nothing about, that she committed suicide and her family was worried that, you know, that she might commit suicide too because there's
Carlotta.
Carlotta, right?
Valdez.
Same age and they had the same, you know, afflictions of depression, you know?
Right.
And I was like, that's such a weird thing for Hitchcock to do. And
it,
the movie
really is. In the movie, yeah, I 100% agree with you.
Doesn't give you, like, anything else. Since it's only his Jimmy Stewart's perspective the whole time, and he's the one being fooled, that's where the, like, this is why the movie is number one, because you are both the protagonist, and you're watching the protagonist go through this whole thing for the first time. You're watching everything you're meant to watch. You are being designed against. Everything is put in front of you against your will, you know, because to trick you, because he wants you to think whatever. In this case, in Jimmy Stewart's case, it's the old friend that's trying to get away with murder. But in Alfred Hitchcock's case, he's tricking us into thinking we're watching a different kind of movie. And it's such a good fucking cool idea. It's a cool head fake. It's a head fake that's a whole story. The whole story's a head fake. It beats. That's why, yeah. You know. That's why it's such a good script and a good idea. And then that's why there's a whole fourth thing. Like when you, at first you might wonder, like, why is he so obsessed? Like the poor man, he's gonna go around the whole city of San Francisco.
I know.
For the rest of his life, looking for her. And then you see this girl, and you yourself don't know for sure what's going on. You know, I bet you a lot of people. And honestly, Raf, I wish I was there to remember when I first saw this movie in high school what I thought, like. When I piece it together, either when the movie told me or like before, I'm not sure. Probably when the movie told me, because I was an idiot kid watching movies. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I love movies and all that, but I was just getting into, like, you know, more adult movies or why they're awesome. And but man, I wish I was there with audiences at the time in 19 whatever, figuring this out, like, until, like, it was actually her the whole time. And nope, it's just an actual perfect murder storybook,
yeah, thing. yeah that's what's so great about it. And it's like, it is the perfect murder because the guy does get away with it. Like he finds out, but it's all through the fact that he's just has this obsession and he gets to this perfect he gets to you know, re-fall in love with her, or just like get to make to fall in love with her, like make her back how she was. And then, like, it doesn't do it until then, right? And then with the one necklace that she wears.
That's the one thing that makes him cracked. I mean, that really puts it, the fortune, him solving it is what leads him to have like a tormented doomed life.
Yes.
Because it lets to your death.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Because and his reaction to everything.
Yeah, right. And this is exactly why you don't trust nuns. I mean, it's just...
Dude, it scared the shit out of her. And I you know, it's funny because I rewatched... This is like my fifth time, I want to say, watching it for the show in this case. And every time I forget what gets her to die in that scene. And I'm like, does he push her? No.
No.
It's the fucking nun every time. And I keep forgetting that the fucking nun comes behind like a creep, like the nun from Conjuring 2. Coming out of the shadows.
Coming out of the shadows, yeah, yeah. 100% dude.
And scare me again because I didn't remember.
Yeah, she comes out of nowhere. And it's funny because, James Stewart's character, Scotty, just kind of he also gets, a little bit, scared, but it's more, scared that she fell, not scared that she, this nun came out of nowhere, you know? And
The most forgettable nun, because I keep forgetting she's coming up in that scene until it does.
That's funny.
Yeah, and film history, the most forgettable one. But that whole thing works so well, and it's such a dark ending. It's so dark.
It really is dark. Yeah,
it's so much more dark. But obviously, you assume from those kind of points that most likely James Stewart, whatever testimony he might give, would lend to the fact that hey, this bitch was a fucking actress, but tricked me into thinking she was this guy's wife. Look how she's dressed. Right. And then probably that rich ex-friend of his is going to get caught. You know,
I mean, but theoretically,
it's a sour ending. It just ends right there.
It does end right there, yeah.
And it's leaves you to think about that as you're leaving the movie theater or whatever. Like your jaw dropped. Kind of. It really drops the mic and then leaves. It's a powerful ending. And the whole time, it's it really makes you work for it because you're constantly... There's a lot of scenes without any dialogue in the movie. There's two huge ones, really. One we talked a little bit about was when James Stewart's looking for her everywhere after she's died, after he thinks she's died, and looking for her everywhere, looking at her in every photo and every person's hair in the background, right? And then before that, when he's tailing her, and this is before she jumps off the bridge into the water. I forget which bridge it was or whatever, but you see long stretches of, he makes you work for it. He makes you look for everything because you're watching he knows you're watching a Hitchcock movie. He knows that you're looking for clues, looking for things to remember.
Yeah.
And he's fucking with you the whole time.
Yeah. He's an asshole.
He's an asshole. Right. Right. I mean, genius and asshole sometimes are often are paired together. So
yeah, no.
Right. And it just works really well. I really like it. And James Stewart's a perfect casting too, because that guy never really plays tough, but he doesn't play spineless either. But he can almost play both. You know, that actor has that weird versatility.
Yeah,
can't explain it.
No, it's true. But what's funny is that they do a good job of setting it up. I mean, the movie's really just really good, but they do a really good job of kind of giving you a thing about James Stewart's character, which is he was never meant to be a cop forever. He was, that's his thing. His career was you're going to be chief of, a face of something, a lawyer or a chief of police or something along that nature, where it was being a cop just got you to that aspect. Right. And he was on his way theoretically, right. Cause he was a detective already, you know, make detective without.
Yeah. He looked like he had a track.
Always. He did have a track. Exactly. So seeing that and then knowing that, oh, okay. Cause you kind of look at him, you're like, I just don't see this guy as a cop really as a detective. You don't get that much to him. He's almost too for what you could normally know him from a cop aspect.
Yeah, it's almost like the movie's apologizing for him in advance too, because when you see him first talk, because you see the opening is him having the traumatic experience of the cop hanging in front of him hanging off the
ledge. Right, exactly. Vertical. It is almost apologizing for him, for who he is.
Right. Because the first scene where he's talking with that girl, his ex, actually, because after that, when they're talking about what he's going to do next, his future and all that, and not going back to the police force, they're kind of apologizing for him because she kind of mentions to him you were a lawyer and then you suddenly become a cop, you know, she's talking to him that way, kind of, but to us, had to explain off like the Jimmy Stewart-ness.
Right, right, exactly.
Maybe.
Yeah.
A little bit.
A little bit, right.
Yeah, a little bit. What'd you think of her character and her addition to the movie and what she added to it or not? Maybe she subtracted to it for you. What's her name in the movie? His friend, his one only friend.
Oh,
what's his name? What's her name?
Midge.
Yeah, okay, Midge.
I mean, I thought she added on to the fact that you get to see who James Stewart is as a regular person. You get to see him as a not just like cop or whatever, as a guy with obviously issues, you know, and he gets to be she's almost like his sounding board, you know? So like, it's weird because obviously they like should be together. They talk like they are together already. The way they banter and everything, you know, they've very much so speak that way. Right. It's just like, oh, like this is an old married couple already. Like they've been married for forever and they're just good friends, who had something before, but not anymore. And, they're just beating around the bush for whatever reason, whoever's making the first move. The problem is nobody wants to make it.
It's good that you mentioned that, because I was going to ask that kind of question. Do you think that's
no? It does feel like that. It does feel like obviously something happened. Whatever reason that they fell apart, they still want each other, or else they wouldn't see each other. Or they're still, you know, amicable and everything. But at the same time, you can tell that whatever the reason they stopped is, at this point, he doesn't care to pursue it unless if she cares. And he's just waiting for her to do something, and she never does. And by the time she reacts, it's too late. He fell in love for somebody else. So at that point, she just becomes that kind of like that anchor that we can always go back to know that, give us that remembrance of who James is as a normal person, not as a detective or not as a person who's fallen in love with what's her name.
Okay.
So yeah, she does add to it. And you know, they get to talk about what's going on, instead of him just, I guess, talking to himself or thinking about it, or else the movie would be kind of weird without her in it. And it's almost like a mirror person of him, which is kind of cool. That's what kind of fits really well also, because he feels very comfortable talking to her about anything, because it's almost like talking in the mirror, right? The difference is you're not saying the same thing. Yeah, it's just somebody thinking like-minded.
Yeah. No, that's an interesting point. I kind of feel like I have something similar, but not quite. I always thought that... he was always just too distracted for her. Like, he never really put an ounce of thought into...
Yeah, that too. But that's probably why they broke up.
You know? No, I feel like maybe that wasn't a breakup. I feel like she... Well, because he mentions that she broke off the engagement.
Yeah.
And that, you know, during college, that could mean a lot of reasons. You're young, you want...
Yeah, that's true.
Whatever. I'm not going to explain away a life that I don't know anything about the history. But I think in Mitch's case, like, she regrets that. And, you know, tries to bend the friendship towards a relationship. And we see that. I think it's the movie makes it clear when she fails to make that joke land about the painting. You know, she thinks it means one thing, and to him it means something way worse.
Yeah, that's true. Right? Yeah.
You know, and not only means that she's been kind of, well, I mean, she kind of told him, I'm going to find out, you know, and all. And she does. She obviously knows about the painting and where he goes and about this woman and stuff. But, that thing is doesn't land right. And that's why she, like, you know, pulls her hair up and she starts hating
now,
herself for
it. In her defense, he does overreact a little bit. Like,
No, he does. But either way, like, even if he didn't react that way and like leaves and has a gloomy ass face, which James Stewart gloom faces, I didn't know it was that powerful. Because it's James Stewart, right? He's a wonderful life. I agree. He overreacted in my estimation for sure. But his reaction, though, would have still been, even if it wasn't that dramatic, it still would have been the same. And that would have led to her like beating herself up for it, because it didn't land. It wouldn't have landed for him anyway, even if he acted, you know, not quite so dramatically.
Yeah.
But I think it would have had the same effect. But if you do it this way, it says, I mean, in one scene, it shows you everything. Like, not only did her advance work or advance to... Oh, the pre-advance to the advance, right? Of maybe getting him back together with him. But not only didn't work, but that she hates herself for failing and like lost her chance.
Yes. Because
this guy fell in love while she thought he was being distracted.
Right.
By his trauma. But no, you know, whatever. Life happened. Life got in the way, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And also the classic arc of detectives Well, I mean, this isn't his last case because he's not even a detective at the point of the movie starts, but the kind of thing, like the one more thing, the one last job kind of feel. I mean, this is kind of tropey, and this is like a lot of those kind of movies had this in it. Like, what, come on, help an old friend for one, you know, one job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm glad that the movie didn't resort to, like, oh, he's broke as fuck and he needs the money. Now, I mean, a lot of movies kind of lean on that too much. And no, in this case, he doesn't need the money. He's just doing it for a friend. And he falls in love, you know.
Yeah. So, but you know what's funny? At first, I thought the movie was going to go somewhere where it's not really a friend. He's just remembering somebody different. Because he's like, no, I don't. She's like, I don't remember that person. Remember, she's like, you know, and I was like, oh, is there something there? And I was like, no. But at the same time, I'm just looking for something because, like, it's Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah. And
he's
an
asshole. He's an asshole. Yeah. I really like Mitch. I really like their back and forth. I like the way she thinks and talks overall. I would have thought the painting was hilarious. But then again, I'm not Jimmy Stewart, so what do I know? But I think I like Mitch more because, you know, one thing about Kim Novak's character is that, you know, they're hauntingly beautiful. Like, I don't necessarily say she's not beautiful. I can see why a lot of people would say that. Not me personally, not my taste. But that being said, though, I would say that the haunting quality is always there on that actress. And she nails it in this movie where, like, you feel like someone is possessing. You feel like the beauty has been hijacked by something. I don't know how or what in the performance she's doing there that makes me think that, but I can buy it. I can buy James Stewart saying that. I can buy the film description, right, that you read. Right. The synopsis saying that, I buy that completely. And it's such a strange thing. Like, she's like untouchable. You know, that's, I always prefer Midge over her any day of the week because Midge is completely relatable and touchable. And I don't mean that in a whatever way. But I'm just saying, unlike Kim Novak, where she feels like, what are you going to do to approach her? Like, talk about 100 years ago?
Yeah. It does feel like that. Yeah. 100%, because you're like, and even then he's struggling in the house. Like, what do you want to talk about? And after I saved you from drowning,
yeah, right? And then she just leaves, bolts, and leaves a note. You know, like, it's not even, everything's irregular, and yeah, with that, and you could tell that. That's when you know, if you want to go to, like, now that we know everything, she's not haunted at all. You know, she's just like an actress, right? Do you think that's like the scene where after, like, she pulls him out of the water and takes him to the house? Do you think that's like around the time when she's kind of falling for him at all? Or when do you think this starts happening?
I think it is that time. I think when he saves him, because it's like almost like, oh, you've seen me already. Like, you saved me from a time where maybe I was supposed to die here instead, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was weird. Did you think she was supposed to die there and him not save her?
You think so? No, because then because he wasn't ready for it. They had to play with their vertigo aspect of his. That's the only reason.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, you're right.
For him, is because of the vertigo.
Yeah, that's you're why right.
It's called vertigo because his affliction caused them to be a target for this whole con.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, no, I was gonna say like maybe, but no, that's not right. Because he can swim.
Right, because he can swim. Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of hard to hide that body. Yeah. Have you seen the Vat of Acid episode in Rick and Morty?
Yes.
Okay, it's like that. Like, they have to, like, have bones on the bottom or something of that body to
rise. Right, right, right.
It goes down to suck oxygen or something. Like, it would be much more elaborate and weird to pull that off in the bay. But yeah, the vertigo thing really fucks him up. But no, here's the thing, is that earlier in the movie, I think towards the beginning, I think in that first conversation, Mitch and he has, they talk about how another, like, shock to the system would, like, could potentially cure him. Now, here's my doomy question. Do you think he's cured after, like, at the end of the movie?
I honestly do feel like, I think the fact that he was, like, focused and he wasn't thinking about being potentially sick, you know, and once he gets past that one part, he was fine. I think he was fine. I think he is almost shocked out of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a weird, like, I don't know, what do you call that? Like a dark karmic twist, right? On the thing is that the one affliction he's been so worried about and has been, it jumped his career over, right? All this stuff. He got over at the time he's losing the love of his life as he's like completely yelling at her and like all this bad stuff. I get all the truth is coming out. It's such a it's a fucked up circumstance in many different levels. The more you think about it. Because I agree with you. I do think he knocks it out. Like, he gets over it, his vertigo.
It does feel like that, yeah.
Just at the wrong time. Just at the worst time ever. Fucking nuns, man. Because, you know, I mean, who can say, right? If she hadn't fallen off there, would he be in love with her still? I mean, who could say, right? Probably yes.
Probably.
Maybe he betrays. Maybe he, if the betrayal replaces the love, right? Because he feels like he lost someone that was genuine, but he, since she wasn't, how can you, right? I don't know. Who can say? Who, but that's just talking hypotheticals that don't exist. The movie, and she died. Who cares? But yeah. Yeah. Anyway, great movie. I don't know if I have anything else to say. It's such a great story.
No, very much so. It is a great movie, though. No.
And are you good with this review? Or do you want to add more to it or anything else?
No. What do you want?
I do have something. Not to the movie in particular, but how does it relate to his other movies that you've seen? Like, where do you,
that's a good question. Them,
but how do you feel about compared to, like, others?
I'm trying to think.
Psycho, Rear Window, by Northwest.
Or
The Birds, Frenzy. What else? What was Rebecca, I mentioned. Strangers on a Train. Dial M for Murder.
Shit. I love Dial M for Murder.
All right.
Rear Window. Yeah. How does it compare? I don't know. That's a good question. I'd have to let this one sit, really, and just kind of like start thinking about other ones. I'd love to give you an answer right now, but I don't think I can. Overall, I think it's Hitchcock's trying to fuck with me, but we already talked about that. In a Hitchcock way, he does a good thing of like almost not putting himself in there until he has to. And it's really weird because, you know, at this point he's already made so many movies.
I mean, he's playing with form. That's the thing about him. He's like he's revolutionary in that way. Now, revolution is one word, but another word would be like he's a rebel. Like he's just constantly flaunting. Like, no, let's just not do the same thing they always do with the catching killer kind or killer cop mentality. Let's just keep churning everything always.
Yeah.
So like in Rope, it's like, let's just put it all in one place, one situation. Let's have these guys put the murderer, the body in the middle of a party. You know, or the other one, Strangers on the Train, right? The perfect murder of two strangers. Like, oh, he's just constantly thinking of different ways to, like, do the same thing. You know?
Yeah.
Kind of. And it's just... It's,
no, you're right. You're a guy. You're right. You're right. Very, very, very true.
Yeah. He's just like he's so sick of like the types of movies he makes, but that's why he makes them so different, or the same but not different, or whatever. You know what I mean? Anyway, but that's our review of Vertigo. Check it out. And it's not streaming anywhere, but you can buy it or rent it anywhere. You can buy or rent it anywhere, anytime. And that's it for this marathon, which I might just call it the Sight and Sound Marathon. Just whatever, because I don't think we're going to do another one. So, Sight and Sound Marathon, that will be updated eventually. But this is our, what, eighth movie or seventh movie that we've done?
I think so.
On the Sight and Sound Marathon. So, check out previous entries over the last several weeks. They've been in order. So, we've done, like, Lawrence of Arabia. We've done Apocalypse Now. We've done other things. So, check it out on our website, otherpodcast.com. Now, we're going to have a discussion. This is like a thing before the exit.
Yeah.
Where we're going to talk about what the next marathon should look like. And I should warn you now, listeners, that our next show, which I'm picking the movies for, will not include this next marathon. I already have three movies picked out, completely new ones. Streaming, of course, because of the COVID. But there's just going to be three new movies. So... But with that in mind, Ralph, let's talk about marathon. And the one thing we have in mind that I kind of convinced you and a little bit of Luke on the text that we should do a person, like focus on one person's life,
right, career, right, right,
instead of like a genre or a type. So what's your first pitch, let's say, or how do you want to talk about it? Do you have someone in mind?
Someone, I don't know. That's a good question. Person wise,
yeah, we're thinking maybe actor this time. We kind of shot for a director with Steven Spielberg, but even though we didn't finish it,
yeah,
we did a good chunk of it though. We did like six,
we did, so, yeah. I don't know if I think if we do person, I think we should do it, either by the ages, and something pinnacle in those in that respective age, like, so someone already established, I say we can start off with, instead of like somebody who's maybe just starting off or midway through their career or something like that, potentially.
So someone a little older or something like that?
Well, yeah, but not like, yeah, it could be a lot of people. I mean, but we can pick something with you know, because not everyone sticks to one genre. Not
there's everyone so many, does action. So many approaches. Like,
there really is. Yeah, I don't know what to do.
We could focus on person that died already, so that way there's a finished, completed work, and we can focus on not all of them, maybe, but like some of them, knowing that that person's work is done.
Yeah.
Or we can focus on someone's younger career where they've only had, let's say, 3 or 4 movies, but they've all been different or amazing.
Yeah.
Or polarizing, even though their careers are still long or ahead.
Yeah, because I was thinking about, for example, what's that guy? Patterson? What's his name?
Robin Pattinson. I was thinking about him earlier today. Yeah.
So I was thinking about him. And I hate to say this, but we could start off even with, like, you start off with Twilight, because that's what he starts off with, right?
Right.
And then you can move on to, like, what he's done after.
I mean, post-Twilight career has been awesome.
Right, exactly. And then what he's been doing even already after his post-Twilight career and just as an established actor. You know,
yeah, or establishing himself as a different kind of actor, too.
Very much so. Yeah. Yeah, you can go in that aspect, right, and go like, well, this is how he started.
We just did a Kristen Stewart movie last time, but Kristen Stewart also another Twilight heiress, right?
Very much
came out to gig with completely different movies, establish herself as a different kind of actress.
Right.
Those two did really well for each other after those movies.
They really did, yeah. And I was very surprised because I thought they were going to be typecasted, specifically Kristen Stewart.
Me too. We all thought this.
That's good. That's good.
We all gave him no shot, and they made us take notice. It was good. Great. That's a good one, Ralph. And what we go, you know, there's also heavyweights, like heavyweight actors we've all
right. About. Yeah.
Not just stars like Tom Cruise, which you would kind of mention off air. But like maybe a Daniel Day-Lewis type or right. a Philip Seymour Hoffman type.
Yeah, I almost feel like we should go through the ages, though. I think we should start something when they started. Maybe not the first movie necessarily, but the first or second or third. And then obviously if it's too big of a gap, then yeah, maybe the first makes sense. Just to see how they started. And then obviously just pick somewhere in the middle, pick somewhere towards the end. Or two in the beginning, two middle, two end. Make it 6 if you want to do that way. Or just do 3 or 4 if you want to make it short so we can just keep moving from person to person. I think 3 might be a great number for this because you can just do one of each of us, one me, you, me, Luke.
Just one pick?
One movie each. And then this way we would pick all in the era, you know? Or, like I said, we could maybe just do 4. 4 would be a nice number, a nice tight number as well. Where it's it doesn't feel like it's too long of a marathon for one person because then we just feel like I've been watching this guy's movies all the time. And then we can pick, but it's enough to pick from what his collection or that the collective work that he's done already.
Or she,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I kind of like that. So who do we want? Who have you ever wanted to? Have you ever...
Not really. I don't really like, you know, I like to go back to old people. I like to go back.
Actors who don't act anymore?
Yeah. I mean, because that's, I feel like I'm biased because like, I feel like I have that, that mentality. I could just always catch up to the shit that they're doing because they're still acting. You know, like I watch their shit as it comes out or whatever. Bullshit. But that's also a lie because, you know, whatever.
Someone like Robert Redford?
I was thinking something like that, like a Jack Lemmon, for example.
Jack Lemmon, that's a good one. That's a good one, yeah. I mean, he died, right?
Yeah, if I'm correct, he died in 2001.
Oh, really? 2001? No.
Yeah, 1925 to 2001, yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought he died way after that.
Yeah, he's got 100 movies, actor credits, like... I
personally own like 3 or 4.
Yeah, right. I mean, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like somebody like maybe we could start off with somebody iconic, or maybe we could start off with somebody that most people would know. Because I think Jack Lemmon is somebody I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh, I think I know who that person is. But once you find out who it is, yeah, everyone knows who that person is.
I mean, it depends on our listeners demographically. Like, I don't know who.
That's true, too.
I mean, we don't really hear from them. Which, by the way, send feedback, podmoviecast@gmail.com. I would love to know who the fuck is listening to us. I know we have numbers out there. I just don't know who or what kind. But, you know, let's say if it's ballpark based on the people we know, I would say, yeah, Jack Lemmon is someone that people are like, oh, yeah, I know that name. Not 100%. Some people be like, yeah, totally. Other people are like, who the fuck are you talking about? All right. So you want to do Jack Lemmon?
I mean,
we can talk about Gil from The Simpsons. You know, it's the same fucking guy.
It's basically him, yeah. We could. I just gave an actor. I just threw an actor out. We don't have to do Jack Lemmon. Right. It's not a big deal.
What about like Jack Nicholson? He's very famous.
Jack Nicholson wouldn't be a bad one because he has... Career. He does have an old career. He hasn't really done stuff. in a while.
Not lately. Either. I mean, he's fucking old as shit.
No, yeah. I know he's old as shit, but I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then we could touch on his older stuff too. He's done some, I mean, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I can finally watch One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. Oh, well, then yeah.
Let's just do it.
How have you not seen that movie? I would say Five Easy Pieces, maybe, but yeah.
Because it's daunting.
It's daunting? Why is it daunting?
I don't know. It just feels like it is.
Oh, no, it's a big-ass movie, but it's also a fun movie, even though it's highly depressing. But it's very fun, though, at the same time. It's both those things. You'll never think of Insane Asylums the same way again. Let's see. Okay, well, I mean, let's think of Jack Nicholson. Do we have the IMDb pulled up?
I can't. Hold on, I have to type it in.
Let's look at his work. Let's, you know, this is us having a discussion, right? So let's not fucking, you just can't just say, oh yeah, we came up with a name.
There's obviously Chinatown.
Chinatown, Jesus Christ, can I pick Chinatown four times?
The Departed, I mean, this is just good movies. Mars Attacks, cool. It's gotta be Mars Attacks, he plays the president.
Dude, he does play the president. About Schmidt is not bad.
It's not bad.
As good as it gets is not bad.
But if you go all the way back down, The Crybaby Killer is his first movie.
Dude, Batman, A Few Good Men.
He's got a lot of good works, man.
Ironweed, Broadcast.
But I feel like we have to start somewhere in these, like his first 5-10 movies or somewhere.
Okay. You know? Well, no, because I mean, a lot of that stuff from back then, you'd be surprised. They're like
yeah, I know.
Like they're just like a little. Little persons in that movie, you know. So let's go.
I would say maybe Easy Rider.
Oh, yeah, right. He's not a main character. He's a side character.
Yeah,
but not that we have to pick side characters. We totally not.
Yeah,
but yeah, maybe an Easy Rider would be a good start. Let me see. Where is it? Fucking 1960.
Because before anything before that, really, then you have to go. I don't know any other movies. Everything else that's coming out would be then it's Chinatown. That's the big one. Next big one.
Oh no, Five Easy Pieces, Ralph. It's the next big one for him. The Last Detail, I heard, well, I've never seen it, but uh-huh. That's another huge one. And then Chinatown, of course, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
After that, we start getting into The Fortune, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I mean, we could do Five Easy Pieces if you want. That sounds fine to me.
Oh, no, I don't mind doing Easy Rider, but have you seen Easy Rider?
A long time ago.
Okay. Maybe it is where, I mean, because usually I would rather... for you in general, like I would rather you watch something new, but
yeah. Well, I mean, I haven't seen both of those movies, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, right. So maybe Easy Rider is the best one. It is more iconic, and I feel like it is better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but if we are trying to highlight the actor, do right. Play him as a big.
And Five Easy Pieces might be
right. That's what I was gonna say. I feel like then we should do that then, instead.
Okay, I haven't seen that movie in five ever either. Five Easy Pieces forever.
Yeah.
To be specific. Okay. So I think Five Easy Pieces sounds a safe bet. That covers 1970.
Yeah.
So you want to skip the rest of the 70s? Skip Chinatown? Skip One Flew Over? Or should we stay on the...
I don't know. Because I think it all depends on where we go in Five Easy Pieces, right? Because how much different is that from a Chinatown role that he did? Or One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest? Because if they're completely different, then you could almost include at least one of those other movies.
Well, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Five Easy Pieces are definitely closer in the types of characters he's playing.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, there are also polar different kinds of movies. It's, you know?
Yeah.
The character is similar. Like, right. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, he plays like a...
But we're trying to talk about how the actor... Yeah. Right? We're trying to talk about the actor.
Chinatown's definitely a difference, a big difference.
So then I think we almost can still do Chinatown. And then I think we can skip till the 80s and go somewhere with Postman Rings Twice or Shining or...
Shining's been done to death.
Batman. We can do Batman. I mean...
Oh, that was the 80s?
That's 89.
Shit,
that's end of 80s.
So Witches of Eastwick. He plays like the devil or something.
That's right. I remember that. Terms of Endearment?
Oh, no.
No?
No. Sorry.
You don't want the Terms of Endearment? It's just so bad?
No, it's just that he's not a major character in that movie.
No, I guess you're right.
I mean, he's not... Okay, he's not a main character.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. I don't remember him. I remember John Lithgow. I remember the Shirley MacLaine.
I hear you.
I'm sorry. Maybe I'm misremembering it. But, okay, so if we do Five Easy, then Chinatown.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that covers 70s, good chunk of maybe, let's say maybe up to 80 something. So let's go, if we go to the 80s, if we do something like Batman, I mean, that's they're hitting a different gen of movies, like a director, maybe that would be a good pick. And then...
I think it would be.
And then if we do like one in the 90s, maybe, and then one in 2000s, I think we're solid.
Yeah, so what do you want to do in the 90s? Mars Attacks?
You really like Mars Attacks, huh?
I find that it's a funny movie to watch. But I think I almost feel like, which one? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say A Few Good Men. He's a supporting role.
I think so, but it's a big role. It's a big supporting role.
Yeah, it's a huge role. I mean, that's his, all the quotes come from him. Everyone quotes that movie because of him.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
The Crossing Guard, though, very good. As Good As It Gets feels like everyone. That's just too fucking... Everyone knows the movie too much. I think A Few Good Men might be the best.
I think also, A Few Good Men would be, yeah.
It'd be nice to have that dialogue from Aaron
Spider-Man. It would also be nice to see him as a supporting role as a later actor also.
Yeah.
Instead of a supporting role starting.
Yeah. And then the only thing I would even remotely do after that is The Departed in the 2000s.
You wouldn't want to do About Schmidt?
I mean, I saw that movie.
Uh-huh.
And look, I thought it was fine. I don't remember it. Maybe it. I mean, you can twist my arm on it. You can,
no, I'm just curious. Listen, don't get me wrong. I'm 1,000% in on The Departed. Like,
I just like seeing. I mean, this is the first bad guy. I mean, no, it's not the first bad guy. We're doing Batman already.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, The Departed is. I don't know. I think we could. I think we could probably see a lot of what he's done and everything.
It's also Scorsese.
It's also Scorsese. Right. I mean, it is almost a reason to watch The Departed.
I'm shamelessly convincing myself that I should just watch it because it's fucking Scorsese. And why am I saying no to crime movie? Fuck it. Let's just do it. Do we have anything comedy? What did we say? We said A Few Good Men. We said Batman. Batman's kind of a comedy. No, he's not, but he's funny in it.
Right? He's funny in it, yeah.
Five Easy Pieces. I don't remember it being a comedy, although I have seen some of that. Chinatown's funny some parts, but not really.
I mean, it's funny when he says that Chinaman joke.
Yeah, I guess that's funny. The girl's right behind him the whole
time. Yeah.
That's great. Let's just go with The Departed. You know what? Yeah, let's just do The Departed.
All right, you write them down. Don't forget.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Well, when I listen back to this, so remember.
There you go. It's recorded.
Yeah, it's recorded for all time. All right. So now we can get to the end of the show. So you have been listening to A Conversation and to another movie podcast. Remember, you can always find me personally on Armin Filmmaker on Twitter and on Letterboxd. Armin Filmmaker is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ruff?
You can follow me on Twitter at Don Rafael, _ between the Afa and L.
Yes, of course. Is it really?
Yeah, it's Rafael.
Oh, wow. I never actually went to your Twitter account in my life. Clearly. Anyway.
Clearly.
We come out every fortnight. So next time, on the next fortnight, we'll be coming back with all streaming options, all new options. And this time, just like the... I mean, this next time, just like this time, that's what I meant to say, I'm going to go with Netflix. And that's because... I scoured all the different streaming sites. Ian, I picked a lot of horror movies lately, so I kind of wanted to stay away from Shudder this time. I couldn't find anything super interesting or interesting for us to get you guys involved in, as well as myself, in Mubi and in the picks it got. And I'm sorry, Hulu, but
Hulu's really bad on movies. I think they're just kind of like, hey, let's do whatever.
Although I hear they're doing great in shows right now. They're having some hottest shows right now. But they're not shows. Show podcast. So anyway, and I try even going to like the TV, Apple TV, but they only have two movies, or they actually have three movies, but one of them is Dad. It's like a documentary about fathers. I mean, I don't need to see this. I'm going to pick a third one. Wow. And I want to stick to one streaming like thing, like what we're doing.
Yeah.
So I want Netflix again. And that's going to be The Old Guard, which stars Charlize Theron, directed by the director of Love and Basketball, which I really like. But The Old Guard is not out as of yet, but it will come out by the time our recording is next time. Another one is, I think this is an Italian movie. Don't quote me on this. It's called 365 Days. I know very loosely about that plot, but it looks hot and steamy, kind of like body heat kind of movie. So we'll see what that's about. And we'll conclude with a review of Wasp Network, which is a history drama, period drama about... something Colombian or drug runners or Cuban drug runners, something like that. I'm not sure, but it's made by Olivier Sayas, who's a pretty great director, French filmmaker, done some really polarizing movies and throughout his career. So I'm always down for his movies. So check that out. All on Netflix. Two of those out already. The third one will be out very soon. Now, that is it for our show. Until next time, I am Oscar.
And Ralph.
See you later.
Coffee and pie.
Coffee and pie, oh my.
You didn't hear it from me.
I don't know your thoughts at all on this movie yet.
Yeah, I don't know my thoughts either. We'll figure it out, though.
You know your own thoughts?
Eh, we'll figure it out.
That's just good.
There you go.